Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rates and Lanes with your hosts, Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Rates and Lanes podcast. I'm your host, Rico Muhammad, and I will be joined shortly by my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow. We have a little bit of a carrier roundtable for you guys tonight. Be interested to know what everyone is experiencing right now as we are right at the kickoff of Road Check 2021. As I've been doing a little bit of research, I've been seeing that some people have been reporting that they are getting very, very good rates on the spot market right now, as it seems that always around this time of year, people decide that they might as well take a couple of days off and do some maintenance or whatever to the truck. But some people decide that, hey, they've already done all the maintenance, they got all their stuff in order, and they don't need to do anything else. And now's as good a time as any to keep on keeping on and working that spot market is very opportunistic to get some very good rates. Be interested to know what your guys are experiencing right now. Without any further ado, though, let's start off with the this week's DAT Trendlines report. We do not have any change in the price of diesel fuel as of from last week to this week. So diesel fuel prices have remained unchanged, with sitting at a national average price of $3.12 per gallon. Spot rates are in a very different place than they were a year ago at this time. It has been a year since the protests in Washington, D.C., when distressed truckers descended on the Capitol to protest low freight rates. The average spot market van rate is now almost a dollar higher per mile than it was back then. Van rates cooled last week, but reefer continues to heat up, and flatbed is on fire. And what can only be described as unprecedented flatbed rate rally, the national average rate continued to climb last week, moving up another 4 cents per mile. So let's take a deeper look and see how the rates were performing on each segment type, starting out with the dry van segment of the report. Beginning off in the northeastern portion of the United States, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate checking in at $2.35 per mile. Moving down into the mid-Atlantic and the southeastern portion of the United States, we're showing an average outbound rate of $2.57 per mile. Coming out of the Midwest, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate of $2.81 per mile. And coming out of the south central region of the United States, we're showing an average outbound rate of $2.37 per mile. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, we're showing an average outbound rate of $2.67. Let's take a look and see how those flatbed rates were performing over the previous week. Moving along, starting out in the northeastern portion of the United States, we have the average spot market rate coming out of the Northeast at $2.93 per mile. Moving down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we're showing an average outbound rate at $3.19 per mile. Moving up into the Midwest, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate coming in at $3.28 per mile. And coming out of the south central region of the United States, average outbound rate checking in at $2.76. And coming out of the West Coast, we have an average outbound spot market rate at $2.50 per mile. And switching over, jumping into the temperature controlled or reefer portion of the report, coming out of the northeastern portion of the United States, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate of $2.55. Coming out of the southeast and mid-Atlantic portion of the United States, we're showing average rate for reefers at $2.75. Coming out of the Midwest, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate of $3.20. Moving down to the south central region of the United States, we're showing an average outbound rate at $2.79. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate at $3.06. And that, ladies and gentlemen, will wrap up this week's DAT Trendlines report. Happy to report that this week we do not have any bad brokers that have made the list as far as the bad broker report is concerned. So that's always a good thing. And with that being said, and with no further ado, let me welcome my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow. Chuck, good evening. How are you?
We're doing good. How are you, Rico?
I can't complain too much. We have been experiencing down this way. I'm not sure if the Canadians have the equivalent of the roll check situation, but they are definitely in full swing down here in the lower 48, as they would say. What about you guys up that way? Do you guys have something to that same equivalent, or
I don't? That's a good question, Daryl. I don't think there is up here right now.
Daryl,
you're on board with us now. Yeah, go ahead. Yes, sir.
I believe we are supposed to have. They're supposed to partake in it as well, being a national road check, but I don't believe they do actually advertise it like the U.S. does.
Yeah, they don't shut things down, and people don't pull their trucks off the road. Mind you, Ontario, where Daryl and I are based, has really, really strict enforcement, not just at the scales, but both provincial, which is like your state police, as well as municipal police, as well as the equivalent of the DOT, Ministry of Transport. You've got all these cops that are trained in how to check brakes on trucks and what to look for. So there's a lot of enforcement. My understanding is, and I could be wrong, Ontario is the harshest jurisdiction in the continent. So most of the carriers, like even the bad ones, are pretty good as far as keeping their equipment in order, because it's they'll just put you in truck jail here. What they do is they seize your truck and the load, and you have to get it towed out of the compound. They will tow your truck into a compound, and they store it, and they charge you some ridiculous amount, and then a licensed mechanic usually has to pull it out once it's fixed. It's very punitive, and that's for having your brakes out of adjustment. So you don't fool around up here.
Wow.
There's no wiggle room. Oh, yeah. You know, whoever said the land of the free, maybe for other people, not for truckers.
Yeah,
wow.
It's actually
that's a pretty stiff penalty.
Yeah.
I actually got nailed in that.
You did?
Yep. Our mutual friend, Jeff, was foolishly driving with 11 inches of free play on his steer. Actually, two and a half years ago, had one of the trucks impounded, and it's actually quite more intense. They actually take the plates off, and you have to recertify the vehicle to get it back on the road.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's actually, and you get a nice fine. I learned my lesson. That's hence why I introduced my maintenance program. And now every time the trucks are in the yard, they get gone over. I have my own check sheet that my mechanic follows, and it's the same as a safety pretty much. You know, other than putting a sticker on, I really changed my attitude back in 2017 and said, this isn't going to happen again.
Yeah, you can't afford to. Let's welcome our other guest sitting at the round table, Ted Johnson, the CEO of Elite Special Commodities. Ted, welcome to the show.
Hello. How's everybody doing?
Great.
Doing well.
We're just getting into a spirited conversation here about safety. Ted, you're out of Nebraska. What are you doing there to prevent? Obviously, you're the sort of guy that does not shut down his trucks during safety week. I know you that well. What are you doing as far as preventive maintenance?
Right. So I have fired shops before that have let me down, and I've really made a big show on the way out when I leave those shops to make sure they understand, because of their negligence or them not caring enough about their customer, you know, when I get put out of service or I get a ticket, I explain to them how that follows my FMCSA record. And then when the insurance company is coming around to renew my insurance policy, you know, they look at that. And, you know, I always have that conversation now when I go to a new shop, you know, I just say, look, this is why I left the last one. And, like, this stuff cannot be afforded to miss. And I said, I'll pay you guys an extra hour of labor just to try to find something wrong, you know. I said, I don't have a lot of extra money to, you know, I don't have a pile of money just to throw at something like this, but I do have the money to afford to fix what's wrong and not miss anything either. So I you know, make sure I got the right shops working on the equipment and, you know, make sure they understand what I expect from them. And it's as much as little of, even if it's a shock, just one shock out of the four or something that's out.
Oh, yeah.
It's a shock replace. You know, let's not mess around on anything. I don't care if it's $10, $500, let's get it replaced and fixed. So, and then, like, myself, I carry a creeper on, whether, you know, I carry the creeper on the truck or the trailer, depending on what I'm pulling or driving, I always make sure I have a creeper to lay back on. If I'm on a cement lot anywhere, I just get the creeper and a flashlight and go look at brakes and wheel seals.
Smart. You know what? You can't be too careful. You really can't. And there's nothing to get under there with a grease gun and hit everything with grease once in a while on a steady basis.
Right. Absolutely. Yep.
And, you know, that's one of the things that concerns me sometimes with some of these new trucks. You know, the older trucks, you used to have to change oil every 10,000 miles or so. So, of course, when you're changing the oil, you could get under there and you would check and the mechanic would check and you would inevitably, especially on an older truck, you'd find something. Something is loose. Doesn't take much. But now, so many of the trucks with synthetic oil, people are going 50 and 60 and 70,000 miles without changing oil. That's not an excuse not to get under there and check the other things. But they don't have the reason to get under there as frequent as they used to. And I think that hurts a lot of companies' safety, especially smaller operators.
Well, right. With the synthetic, if you're going to do that, you definitely need to be stepping up your – you still should be greasing every 10,000 miles, and that gives you a reason to get up underneath there and be, you know, kind of get your hands on everything and look at everything. But that, like you say, it's a matter of changing the culture and the way that you think about it, the way that you think about how all that stuff needs to be handled. And I think that it's enlightening to hear that they're so strict up in Canada that it definitely would change. I think that would definitely change some attitudes down here if we had something similar to that effect. But then again, I don't know. It might cause a mass mutiny at the same time because
They'd all be driving around Washington, D.C. protesting that they're too strict.
Right.
But, yeah, that's they are that strict in Ontario. And, of course, we have the same thing as you. If you have, if you get a bunch of citations, your insurance goes up. And the insurance companies, there's only, I think, three insurance companies in Canada that are writing business going into the U.S. for cross-border. That's it.
Mm. Actually, there's just a new player introduced. Only one insurance agent has them. I can't think of the insurance agent. It's Cherokee from the U.S.
They've actually entered
into Canada.
Yeah, I know who they are. After the show, if you're thinking about it, let me know, okay?
I'm not thinking about it. I'm staying put. I'm actually maybe going back to Old Republic this year, but I'm staying put. I'm working on a certain plan that I want to do myself, and I'm doing a bunch of jumping right now. I'm looking at building long-term relationships because I've built a good rapport with my insurance company on my safety record and what I'm doing. So the easiest way to get better priced insurance in the long term is to have the same ones come in and look at how much you've improved over the year or, say, versus 2 years. You know, that's the real goal, is make sure you improve your own operation, not just because of insurance.
I totally agree. Those are some things that you try to control through good habits. I know that our insurance company, who's Intact, they came to us this year And they said, you know, we love you guys. You do a great job. But if you want us to insure you, you're putting cameras in all your trucks. Not in-facing cameras. They haven't asked for that. But they want outward cameras, which we should have. And they're all being installed within the next week. We bought them through the insurance company. They got us a little bit of a deal. But there's so many of those out there, and I really do believe in them. You know, at first I thought that this was just a another tool to work against the driver. But after seeing some footage of where video cameras save people's bacon, there's so many crazies out there. Four-wheelers, and there's crazy 18-wheelers too. The some of the lack of training out there is it's awful. So people get their trucks wrecked, and it's not their fault, but if they have a camera, it certainly protects them. Ted, have you got cameras in your trucks?
Yes, I have. I just use, my navigation system that I buy for the trucks. On that navigation system, there's dash cam footage.
Okay. And what are you doing, Daryl, for dash cams?
It's actually a great topic. I'm actually using Keep Trucking because they have a great analytics tool. So we've got all the hard braking, hard cornering, fast acceleration set up for automatic triggering and coaching of our drivers. So we actually use them through our logbook so that when we get a triggered event, we automatically get what's going on in front of the truck. It's really great for improving our driver skills.
Now, do you have the one so that if there's hard braking, it starts filming the driver?
No, I don't have any in-cab facing because of the over-the-road and the privacy issue. It's a situation to avoid for privacy. You know, it can get pretty touch-basey. I would like to do it, but I understand the driver's concerns. You know, I have some teams, and, you know, if someone happens to be dressed with curtains, not, you know, it's just a big privacy issue right at the moment.
No, I get that.
But I actually like the analytics of it.
Well, yeah. And it does come on. The ones I met somebody at Tommy Rook's, his big conference a couple of years ago, and his only activated during a hard break or something like that, so that you could see if the driver had been doing something wrong, reaching for a piece of paper or talking on the phone or something at that point. So, because one of the things I do understand that if the driver's done anything wrong, the insurance company, if they know about it, they're not going to spend millions of dollars fighting it in court. They will settle. But if the driver hasn't done anything wrong, here's more proof of your driver's innocence. So it's there to protect the driver as long as he's not doing something like talking on the phone.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. Now, do both you guys, or Rico, you too, does everybody have a policy concerning cell phones? Do you have a written policy?
We do a drunk.
I don't think I have a written policy, no.
Okay. And how about you, Ted?
I don't have one. Maybe I should definitely look into that, though, as I'm starting to grow the fleet.
Yeah. You know, it's as Daryl can attest, and Rico, it's so much easier to do these things when you're smaller. You know, by the time you have 15 or 20 trucks to start a new policy, it's hard. But as you're growing,
really hard.
If you find out, you know, that's why I love these carrier roundtables, because we can talk about best practices, you know, what works. Right now, we're all very fortunate. Shortage of freight isn't our issue this year, so far anyways, which is usually more often than not. That's one of the issues on this show and any other show is how can we make money? The questions are now, how can I get drivers? You know, how can I order some trailers? I'll throw one at you. We had to put 6 trailers into a customer in Cincinnati. And I know somebody that works for for extra trailer lease down in just outside in Dayton, Ohio. I think it's Dayton or Springfield, somewhere in there. And I called them, and I said that we need some trailers to drop down your neck of the woods. And he said, what sort of trailers? And I said, 53-102 dry vans. And he said, you know, well, let me check. We haven't had one in weeks, but I can look at the board in Ohio and Kentucky and Indiana and see what's available. And he said, you know what? There's not one trailer available. This is in all extra leases in their entire network in those three states. So he gave me the name of a fellow in Michigan who leases trailers. He's kind of a wheeler dealer. He'll buy a fleet and sell it and keep some and lease them out. And I called him, and he told me something very interesting. He told me a couple of things. He said, number one, I could take your name, he said, but that would mean you're number 401, and you'd be calling me wondering how I'm doing, and I'm not going to waste my time or yours because there's no trailers. And he said, number two, he said, what's happened? What caused all this? He said, a couple of the big players, FedEx and UPS basically, they always take a whack of trailers from the rental pools throughout America, usually the last quarter of every year. And they did in 2020. And they always give them back in January, except this year. They didn't return one because they all use them for the drop and hook operations. So all those tens of thousands of trailers have been taken out of the rental system. And that's why there's such a shortage of trailers right now. I don't know if anybody on this line has tried to buy or rent a used dry van, or even a new one for that matter.
It's pretty hard.
Yeah, they're impossible to find right now.
Yeah. You know, this is like, it wasn't this bad 6-7 weeks ago. I was selling a couple of them. And I'm sorry I sold them. you know, they're worth gold now. I cannot believe it. Yeah, it is. It's dire. How are you? What are you doing for extra trailers, Daryl?
Grabbing anything I can. I don't have any extra trailers. I'm actually short a trailer right now, so I'm using my my Tritium that I have as much as possible. But I'm actually looking at buying some O6s and putting them in the shop and just redoing them.
Yeah.
So you seem to be able to get the older trailers, right?
Yeah, but it depends. You got to make sure that they're good. We've had them with translucent roofs. I've got two Great Danes that I bought. And these are what I like to refer to as pedigreed Great Danes. I bought them years ago from a friend of mine that was getting out of the business. And these trailers were done up to the nines. And I think I bought them about 8 years ago. And my God, these things still look like brand new. They just, you know, they do a good job. And there are some trailers that are, you know, they don't rust out, and they're made better than others. I remember we had Tramobiles, and those things were rusting out a month after we got them.
Yeah, sometimes you got to replace the cross members and stuff, but depending on the cost of the trailer, I've actually got a 20-year-old Tramobile that still goes up and down the road every day out to the West Coast. It's a great shape.
Wow, that is really good. You know what? I have some utilities that we bought. They're reefers that we bought when we bought a reefer company years ago. We still have a few of those, and they're like, believe it or not, they're 96s, and we use them for local work. But my son and I did an experiment on an older trailer. What we did was, it was a reefer, and this is about 5 years ago. We tried this, and you know, it doesn't work as far as a write-off situation, being able to write it off, but it certainly works in other ways. So we took an old trailer that we had, and we had it sandblasted, painted, all new rubber, all new brakes, and a brand new reefer. And you know what? It's like a brand new trailer, and it was paid for. So I think we spent about $25,000, okay, maybe $30,000 with everything. And so for $30,000, we had a brand new reefer.
Not a bad idea.
Yeah, it's just food for thought. Ted, are you looking into getting into dry vans at all, or just you're going to go on into reefers now?
Not really looking into the dry van market, just looking into the reefers. And and everything is hard to come by here in Nebraska as well. The trailer dealer that I bought my reefer from, they have 6-8 different locations throughout the Midwest, and they just told me a huge retail store came in a couple months ago and asked them, you know, what they had for dry vans within their system, and the trailer dealer told them how many they had, and the retailer bought them all, cleaned off everything on their lots.
Wow.
And, yeah, so when I bought my
used
and new.
Wow.
They had, you know, a little bit of both, right. But they just, once they kind of told the retailer what they had for trailers, they just wanted every one of them.
Yeah, that puts a lot of pressure on the system.
And so when I bought my reefer, you know, the guy knew that if he got one in, he would call me and I would write him a check or wire, however it needed to be. So when I got one in, he told me the day that I came and picked it up that they only had 25 trailers within the system total, you know, whether that was flatbed, you know, dry van or reefer, but they just said they've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, no, nobody has. Part of the issue is that the manufacturers, some of them were shut down for COVID for some period during 2020, and a lot of them haven't been able to get raw materials in. And that's why they can't catch up.
Yeah, and some of it, too, from the salesman, he told me, he said, these big trucking companies just aren't trading anything in. They're just, they're keeping all the trailers. And some of my direct customers, you know, they said 2018 or so was a really great year for trucking. But this year has by far been my best year. And my customers are now shipping on Saturdays, and that's never happened before.
Ted, how long have you been in trucking?
For the last 7 years, for sure.
Okay. I got 40 years on you. I've been doing it for 47, and I've never seen anything like this. Like, this makes that little blimp that we saw back in 2017, 2018, that's child's play compared to this.
Oh, yeah. And I have, so within like a 300-mile radius with my flatbed, I've been going both ways at like $5 a loaded mile, direct customers both ways. I'm like,
whoa.
I mean, they're just, yeah, it is totally awesome.
Wow. That is great to hear. And you're keeping it within 300 miles.
Right.
That's true.
Yeah, you know, Grand, you know, Lincoln, Nebraska area to Des Moines, Iowa, you know, so it's about a 300-mile radius.
Straight on 80. You know, that's the, it's definitely the recipe for success with this entire business. And I'm not saying, like, Daryl's business is total opposite because he goes coast to coast, but he has the, he's got the volume of freight. But he does go to one specific area, so that's his strength. Everybody knows if you need something moved from Ontario to anywhere. Where do you start in Boise? Is that your first delivery normally?
No, Fargo.
Okay. Wow.
I start in Fargo, and I set it up with my customer. We deliver on Sunday. We open the warehouse, deliver it, lock up, carry on. Then we're Billings, Bozeman, Missoula, down into Idaho Falls, Pocatello, into Boise, then into Portland,
right.
And into Seattle.
Wow. Yeah. So what do you
I'm
do?
Actually
You'll
getting
send,
a
no, we,
sorry.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Ask your question. I'm fine.
Do you send – so some of your trucks are going straight into Tacoma, Seattle, I imagine. They've got enough freight. They're heading straight out there, correct?
Correct. So
and
we actually play a leapfrog system. So the Fargo, I'll put on the truck that's going straight to Seattle because I know he'll be there on Sunday.
Then the guy who has Billings, his next stop is Spokane. And then the guy who has Missoula goes to, like, Richland, into Yakima, then Seattle. So we leapfrog it so that no one's sitting anywhere waiting.
Great idea. So, but let me ask you something. If you've got a lot of freight going into, let's say, Fargo and into Montana, do you ever not go any further west? Like, if you can make yourself a full load ending up in, let's say, Bozeman or Butte, will you stop there, or you'll always send the guy into Tacoma, Seattle?
They end up always going into Seattle because I have such repeat business coming out of Seattle and Portland. I need my trucks in there.
Yeah,
I haven't even I have a thought of Spokane and Montana as well coming home. I'm working on that. But I have such big customers that have been with me for the 5 years that we've been operating that I make sure I take care of them. I have a different mentality than a lot of people. I don't play the spot market. I started my business and I'm kind of on the spot market, but now we've got such regular customers that we basically make sure we keep everybody happy. I'm not worried about, you know, if I make an extra $3 a mile this month. I know that my customers, yep, after doing it for 28 years, are there. I just worry about service, service, service.
Yeah, you know what? I get that. And if you, it's actually a very easy thing with LTL. If you are patient, you build your business from just point A to point B. You know, you go from, you know, for our American friends, you go from, you know, your route that you're telling people is you go from Chicago to Denver. That's your route. You don't go to LA. You don't go to San Francisco. You don't go to Salt Lake. You just go to Denver. And people will know you're the go-to guy for Denver. It's pretty easy, whether you're doing LTL or truckload. But I do have to say, as far as LTL, I started to say just before the show when we were all sitting in the green room having a coffee together, so the big carriers now have so much freight that they're starting to, some of them are actually starting to stop service in and out of certain cities. I know last week, according to one of our people, SIA just stopped servicing, I believe it was Minneapolis. They just couldn't handle any more freight in or out of. And a lot of the big LTL carriers are having the same issues. So for our listeners, if you want to get into the partial load business, they're not us telling you to compete with the Yellows and the SIAs, because they're behemoth organizations. But if you want to start doing those partial loads, which are, what do you figure partial, Daryl? Anything over 2 or 3 skids? Is that your market?
We're 1 skid to 30 feet. That's my partial market. I don't, after 30 feet, I try to start charging full load, right?
Right. What we found when we were doing a lot of partials years ago, we found that it got to a point where the 1 skid orders weren't worth it because of the pickup and delivery costs. They were just too high. Because it costs you the same to pick up 1 skid as it does 5.
Correct. We use a lot of load bars and logistics, and, you know, we do a lot of stacking and packing, and it's a very unique market. And we actually get more than, you know, we can get the same for 1 as we can get for 2. People are actually need that
right.
1 skid, so you can actually get a little bit better rate. But you got to have the service to get the better rate. You know, that's the key. They got to rely on.
You can't sell that. You cannot sell that service cheap. Now, I know the heavy skids, the 2,000-pound skids, 2,500-pound skids, the big carriers aren't crazy about those. They want they want something a little lighter. Because look at the equipment most of them are running. They're running A-trains or they're running single-axle tractors, all sorts of stuff for the most part. So I know they prefer lighter freight, and they charge more if it, you know, you get those big 2,500-pound skids of some metal product.
That's a perfect market for a guy who gets into partial. You know, that is actually a very perfect market because I do the same weight grading per skid as a mega carrier. So if you have a skid that's paying 2,500, that's 2,500 pounds, I'm already charging you for two skid spots.
Yeah, we did that too. Anything over 2,000 pounds went on to, then it became two skid spot because you can't really, pretty hard to put 2,500 pounds in one skid spot. And if you have two of them, now you've got 5,000 pounds on 4 feet. So you've got to do some fancy, you got to do some fancy planning.
Yeah, and our limit's 1650. As soon as you go over 1650, you're paying two spots.
Right. Okay. We were at 2,000 when we were doing it, but eventually got to the point where it just wasn't worth the local P&D costs because we were doing actually when we were doing a lot of LTL, we were doing all the deliveries in the U.S. off our own truck. So the driver was, we weren't using cartage agents.
Correct. And that's a lot of people try to do that. They don't understand to get together with an agent, find an agent, work on it.
Yep.
And that's been one of my secrets to success. I have an agent I just hooked up with MTS, so I'm actually in Minnesota all the way across the U.S. Now I have an agent in every city, plus I have special agents in Seattle and Portland that my freight's a priority as soon as they get there. They have free work, and they put it on their straight truck, so I can actually take 10 single skids and have them delivered within the first hour of the day.
Wow, that's incredible.
Because it's going in there. It goes in their dock, we drop it off, and the next morning each one of them skids is on 10 different trucks.
Yeah, because they have the critical, they have the mass delivery in those metropolitan areas. It's a great system. Gentlemen, getting on to the next topic, Daryl and I can talk about partial loads all night, I'm sure, and bore some of our listeners. It's a passion we both share. What's everybody doing for fuel right now? Because it has certainly gone up. Not this week, but every month for the last while. Ted, what are you doing about fuel?
As how I'm going about finding discounts? So I use NASTIC, David Owens' program. And then there is another one out there called Mudflap. And it's an app-based fuel discount. And between NASTIC and Mudflap, I just kind of see who's got the better price for the day at that location where I need to fuel up. And that's what I'm doing. And, I mean, it's always 40, 60 cents a gallon savings. Just kind of depends on what's going on with the crude oil market. So that's always crazy.
Right.
It's been real volatile since the pandemic. So.
Oh yeah.
But
definitely
always
and
shopping.
How do you find this? How do you find the Mudflap overall compared to NASDAQ?
Well, for the longest time, Mudflap was kicking NASDAQ out of the park every time.
Really?
I think so many people ended up just using Mudflap, and NASDAQ probably saw the volume really decrease in their network because a couple months later, all of a sudden, you started to see them go about a nickel to a dime cheaper than Mudflap, and then now they're just kind of competitive all within about 2 to 5 cents every day of who's got the better one. But for the longest time, Mudflap was really beating everybody.
Yeah, I haven't. Have either of you gentlemen heard of Mudflaps?
I've heard of it. Yep. Heard of it. NASDAQ I've looked into.
We don't use NASDAQ for fuel because we actually, because of our volume, we do a little bit better on our own. But I think NASDAQ is, I think it's a great organization, and their prices normally are pretty good for fuel and some other services. They're a good buying group. What are you doing for fuel right now?
I strictly have used NASDAQ. I haven't really done a whole lot of as far as trying to comparison shop because I normally just have experienced that I haven't had the same experience as Ted has, I've never heard of the app that he was talking about.
Well, it's worth maybe worth checking into. So, Daryl, what are you doing for fuel these days?
So, I fell with BVD. And as soon as I get a better offer, I always go back to my salesman and tell him. And BVD always comes to the table and increases it. So I just stick with BVD Petroleum through Loves and Petro-Canada in, in Canada. They've treated me very fair, very good. And as soon as they get a whiff that anyone's knocking on my door, they're right there with more discounts.
Wow,
so,
that's great.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, are you finding, because you run both, you're running a lot of miles in Canada, I would imagine, because you do run some Western Canada. Are your trucks doing better on Canadian fuel than they are on U.S. fuel?
It's funny you ask that question because I'm actually doing worse in Canada than I am in the U.S.
Really?
So, and I'm trying to figure out why that is, yeah.
See, we were always told, maybe this is all nonsense, but we were always told that our fuel up here was better than what we would buy in the U.S.
I think it has a lot to do with the terrain, too, right? We have all of Northern Ontario to go through, and when we go to the U.S., we cut a lot of those hills there, right? So you got to really look at the terrain and where you're going. We're going right to Vancouver. You start looking at those mountains and the shifting and, you know, just the size of the mountains compared to Seattle. Most of the time, my U.S. trucks compared to Canadian trucks are a minimum $850 cheaper per trip.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's what the HST included taking off. It is. So.
Woo.
It really is kind of a wearing. Now, I did find when I, the winter time, it becomes a lot closer. A lot closer in price.
Right.
In summertime, the U.S. kicks ass. I think that's just because of a better highway system.
Yeah, well, you know what? I don't think a lot of our listeners realize that the main highway going through Canada is it's paved, okay? It's not a goat path, but an awful lot of it, especially going through Ontario, is a two-lane road. It's like a two-lane secondary highway that you would have, you know, in any of the states. There are areas where you have passing lanes, and things like that where they allow you to pass. But if you get behind some idiot with a Honda Civic pulling a 36-foot cabin cruiser, you're going to be there for a while.
Oh, yeah. Plus the fact that you get out into the prairies, you've got basically a highway system that has traffic lights on it. So you're coming to a stop even though you're on a two-lane highway.
Yeah, very true. Well, that's where Ted runs. He doesn't have the where he is. He doesn't obviously. He doesn't have the traffic lights. But you know, his terrain is very similar to the prairies because he's in Nebraska. So Ted has to contend with the high crosswinds, which they play havoc with fuel mileage. And how's everybody? Ted, how are you making out? I know you've done a good job overall. How are you making out with insurance right now?
Really good. A year ago, I saw an insurance decrease. This last year, it kind of crept back up. Nothing really to do with me, just, I guess, just as the insurance companies in general, I think, upped everybody probably. But my policy renews in August, so we'll have to kind of see how things go. But I haven't had any reports or any accidents or anything to deal with my insurance company since I've been with them, or just in general since I've been trucking. So, you know, I'm probably on hopefully the lower side of everything. So, but
do you improve your training?
I'm always asking for programs. You know, is there anything that I can do to lower it? And they say I pretty much have qualified for anything that they offer so far.
So we've installed Carrier's Edge, which is a great training tool for drivers. We just randomly assigned extra training, reminding training. I do a lot of extra pre-trip training. I have them do it online. just to refresh them about it. And if we do happen to get a violation, then whatever the violation is, we assign everybody that training to make sure it doesn't happen again. Insurance companies really like outside training programs. And Carrier is Edge is actually pretty cheap. It works out like $10 a driver a month. You just go in, pick the module, send it to them. They got 30 days to do it. They can do it on their phone, in their truck. And it really shows the insurance company that you're really trying to reduce risk because you have a training program and you get a monthly statistics report that you can show your guy how much training you've done, how many drivers have completed right away, waited till the end. You can find out who your bad actors are that don't want to do training, so wait to the last 30 day and you can start working on them. I know you're only 3 trucks, but it's still, now's the time to do it. Don't wait till you're 12 trucks like I did.
Okay. I'll definitely reach out.
I have to tell you guys, I want to share something with you. Years ago, when our, I think our safety rating got decimated when we bought a flatbed carrier and we merged it under one. It wasn't done right. And anyways, they took my B+, A- safety rating, and these guys decimated it within probably about 6 weeks. And I was down to probably a C- or a T+. And I remember going through it with the insurance company. And for every infraction, the question from the insurance company was, what are you doing to prevent this type of ticket from happening again? And this was about 12 years ago when this happened. And it's a great point that we learned. When a driver gets a ticket for something, what can he learn to avoid not ever getting that, and what can we share with the entire fleet? But you've gone to the extreme through Carrier's Edge, and I like that. I think it's that's a real scalable model. You could do that with 5,000 trucks.
And it's very easy. Very easy to keep track of.
Yep.
Every once in a while, we just, we do a random thing and resend everything out. And guys are like, oh, I did this last year. It's okay. It doesn't hurt to do a refresher. The insurance companies really like it. They really do like it. But it puts me at ease that if someone does get into a little bit of trouble, now I can sit there and say, well, you just did this training and this training. Why did this really happen? And we can have a conversation. And I take notes and, how do I improve that person's thoughts on what they're doing every day on the road? How do I teach them to make better decisions?
Yeah. It's all about hiring the right people so they make the right decisions on your behalf. That's so important.
I kind of changed my hiring criteria. I really don't care how long you've driven a truck or how you've driven a truck. I'm now hiring great people to drive trucks instead of trying to hire great drivers. I'm trying to look at the person, their attitude, and get a good person in, take some time, and my phone's always on. If you're having an issue with the decision-making, and I take periodic random videos of my guys, I don't wait for it to trigger. I just go in and say, take this minute, take that minute, take that minute, and I watch, and I'll talk to them about it, and we have a sit-down meeting, and we say, okay, see what you did here? What was your thought process while you were doing this? How could we make it better? Did you think about the 10 seconds after you get near that car? Well, no, I was just driving along.
Right.
Well, what's going to happen 10 seconds after that car if he loses a front tire, if he's
right,
carrying a piece of lumber on his roof? So it's all about, I've kind of learned that my job is more about teaching people how to make better decisions going about their day.
Yeah, I agree. And, one of the, along with that, I've noticed that, one of my pet peeves with anybody really, but especially with big trucks, is tailgating. We're all drivers. You cannot stop a truck on a dime. And when you see, and it's real bad if you have drivers that have spent a lot of time driving in the East Coast of the U.S., down New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Eastern Pennsylvania, because it seems if you don't tailgate down there now, everybody's going to cut in front of you and it'll take you 3 days to do 500 miles. So drivers pick up really bad habits from running down there. And that's one of the things that can end your trucking company really quickly, is if your driver, God forbid, goes into the back of a car. But they get into the habit of tailgating. So it's something that we all need to really drill down on drivers, even the most experienced guys. Unless you get those guys, if you've ever been to a NASDAQ convention and they have these this carrier awards banquet, and they have these truck drivers that have been driving anywhere from 1 to 5.5 million miles in their career, accident-free. And my God, these guys are proud as peacocks, and they have every right to be. And I think you have to really instill that sort of culture into your people. It's not a race. It's a, you know, it's not a, it's nothing but a marathon. It's a long, long race. And a young guy or girl can really mess up their career by making a bad mistake. And that's where we can mentor our people about habits such as tailgating and things like that, making those dumb decisions because they're they want to get home because it's their kid's birthday. We all want to be with our kids or grandkids for their birthdays, or have a better place to be than sitting behind some idiot on a multi-lane highway. But that's the career we've chosen, and we need to be professional all the time. And I think we really have to drill down deep with our drivers. How are you doing that, Daryl? Because you've got a larger fleet.
So I've tried to develop a few different questions. One of them in the hiring process is I ask them what they really want. What do you really want out of your life today, next week, 5 years, 20 years from now? And if the answer is money, probably aren't going to get on my fleet. I'm trying to find guys got to realize that, you know, you're choosing to do a job. It is hard. It is long. But you have to be okay with giving up that 12 days. You got to be okay with missing a birthday party, or maybe, you know, I just had a truck get de-vanned at Canada Customs. It was there in the morning. They decided to search him. He had to wait for 8 o'clock to come, had to wait for the forklift guy to come, and he was getting all wound up. You know, I would have been at the yard at 10 o'clock in the morning, gone home, and I remind him, what did we talk about? What are you willing to give up to what you want to get your end goal? It's reminding them that it's not about today or Friday's paycheck. It's about having a safe career, a good career, and being able to retire on time and not paying a lawsuit because you killed somebody.
God forbid, yeah.
Because drivers don't realize they get sued as well, right? Like they think, oh, your insurance will cover it. Insurance only covers it to the say $2 or $5 million, whatever your policy is, but then they personally sue the company and the driver.
Well, I want to add something to that. If a driver is charged criminally because of his or her misbehavior while they're driving, they and they're charged criminally, none of our insurance covers that. And you know, if it's homicidal or motor manslaughter or something, those lawyers charge millions. So where's that driver getting that money from?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a point that we have to drive home with our drivers so they understand how serious this is. They just have to do their job properly. That's all.
Well, I've actually went to developing some other questions about it. So, like, I put in a intersection that we go through a lot of times on a two-lane road. And I ask them how they make a decision that it's safe to go. Because the car's way back there. Okay, how did you make that decision? And we start having, like, I'm having a lot bigger conversations with guys. He's like, well, I know it's safe. How do you know it's safe? How often do you count your actual turn? Like 1,001, 1,002, 1,003, okay, I'm straightened out and I'm accelerating. Did you count how long that car took from that spot to you? No, I just know it's good enough time to do it. Let's step back. You're making a bad decision. Because you can underestimate someone's speed, and you can underestimate, what if you miss a year? You know, these are, I'm getting down into nitty-gritties of trying to reteach everyone to go back to old school and say, hey, I need 10 seconds. Okay, how long is 10 seconds? If you're on a secondary road,
use telephone poles. Say 10 seconds is three telephone poles. Is that really enough time to make a turn? You know, that's what I'm kind of doing to try to get them to think about every action they're doing.
And what the other thing is, if we have a truck on a secondary road, you're assuming that car that you see way off in the distance yonder is going, you're hoping they're going to the speed limit. The problem we have on our road where we live here, north of Milton, we get the odd idiot. It's a 50-mile-an-hour road, and we get somebody that's doing 110 miles an hour. Well, you don't even see them because they're going so fast. So they're way down the road, around the bend. You're pulling out of your driveway. It's worse if you were driving a large truck, and there's trouble. So that's assuming we're making assumptions that that other person's following the law, which sometimes they don't on those two-lane roads, as we all know.
100%.
And how's everybody, Ted, how were you able to get an owner-operator to join your fleet?
I met him through the CMC of Kevin Rutherford's seven years ago. And he's just an older guy, and he's just at that age where he doesn't want to do all the back office stuff. And he just sees, I guess he just has saw me over the last 7 years and witnessed what I've been able to do, direct customers, way I've negotiated, and, you know, he just likes what he saw and just thinks that he'd make a good home here and just knows I'd take care of him. So I guess just evidence of what I've done, that's why he wants to come here.
Well, you know what? Those are always the greatest additions you add to a team are the ones that the guys you know or know of you that you didn't get through some ad. It's some guy that or girl that reaches out to you and said, listen, do you remember me or I heard about you and I'd love to join your team. That's so much more successful. We do some advertising too for owner-operators, and I got to tell you, the vast majority of the ones I interview, we don't hire them. They just don't fit the criteria there. We figure that we have a 10% turnover in personnel with our fleet. And unfortunately, about 9% of the 10% are always the same people. You know, it's actually quite funny. They all say, I understand I'm not going to go to Texas. And 3 weeks later, they come into this batch office and they go, how come I haven't been to Texas? Well, we don't go to Texas. And they, I want to run Texas. We told you we don't run Texas. We almost got to a point now we want to make them sign an affidavit. They understand that we don't go to Texas. But those are by far, you know, the guys like the one you added, if you can just keep doing what you're doing, you know, one of the things you can do that doesn't cost a whole lot of money to add more talent is you can get one of your trailers wrapped. And there's a 53-foot billboard. And there's a company up here in Ontario, I'm sure you guys see them on the road, Highlight Transport. And full kudos to them. They apparently they spend 20 grand a trailer wrapping them. They're beautiful.
Wow.
And he doesn't do the wraps necessarily to just for recruitment, where I think that it's probably not a bad idea to wrap a trailer just for recruitment. Or to, if you're,
I'm looking at,
you know, Darryl,
looking at the time, Chuck. Oh,
did it again,
we
did
on blue
we went over. This is the fastest moment or fastest hour of my whole week. Well,
so
we want to thank
everybody. We're getting ready to wrap it up. If everybody wants to give you guys, if anybody wants to leave their information for people to get in contact with them, now's the time. Darryl, you want to start us off?
Sure. Interested in finding out about Drenco? Please give us a call at 705-214-9659 or email us at Darryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L, at Drenco Specialized, spelled D-A-R-U-N-C-O-S-P-E-C-I-A,
LIZED.com. And always got time for people. Even if someone's struggling out there and needs a little bit of help or wants to get into partial, you don't have to be a driver. You want some information, give me a call. I love talking trucks.
Thanks, Buck.
Dave, you can leave your information as well.
Yeah, you can find my company on Facebook, Elite Commodity Express, or you can check out my website at www.ecetruck.com.
Oh, thank you both. And this is Chuck Snow, and if anybody wants to get hold of me, give me a call at extension 203, and the phone number is 1-800-388-4352. Again, extension 203, or send me an email, chuck@traffix.com. And if there's anything I can do to help any of you, if you're having any issues with your business or you want to get set up with Traffix as a carrier, just give me a call or email me, and I'll help you any way I can. Thank you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Rates and Lanes podcast. I'm your host, Rico Muhammad. Thank you for spending some time with us. Could have been anywhere else in the world, but you took a little time to hang out with us. We're eternally grateful. Check out you guys same time, same place next week, God willing. But in between time, in the meantime, stay healthy out there, everybody. Stay safe. Keep it in between the mustard and the mayonnaise. God bless you and good night.
Catch you on the flip.
Thanks, guys. It was enjoyable talking with you all, as always.
Thank you.